Good morning. Everybody hear me? Okay. So, at the beginning of the contemporary era, a radical change took place in Buddhism, sometimes referred to as the Mahayana Revolution, although it was a quiet, silent revolution and nobody got hurt. As far as I know, the Mahayana Revolution. So during the Mahayana Revolution, the focus changed from the ideal of the Arhat, the lone meditator who looks at his navel, does zazen, looking at his navel and nothing else for generation after generation until finally he gets enlightened. It was just during the Mahayana Revolution, they said, well, this is a little solipsistic, you guys. It's a little inner focused. So Buddha's main disciples were replaced by a series of bodhisattvas 400 years later. And those bodhisattvas were there and are there to hear the cries of the world. To hear the cries of the world. The world is in pain. Many, many people are in pain. We're in pain. The bodhisattvas arose and they're still arisen to hear those cries and to respond to those cries. They're called, referred to as awakened warriors in Tibet. They knew how to pause and leap to help people who were crying, to help them. To nurture them, give them support. They had courage to help others emerge from hells, and they still have courage to help others emerge from hells that they or others have created for them. So these bodhisattvas, these 10 or so bodhisattvas who were placed the earlier heroes in Buddhism, are all radical optimists. This is a time when we need a little radical optimism, don't you think? And in Asian countries, which are mostly other power countries, Tariki countries, there are spirits out there that we call on. We call on for help in China, Japan, Tibet, Bhutan, and we go to power places. We go to mountains, sacred mountains, where certain bodhisattvas hang out. I've never done this except a little bit in Bhutan.
Tim, I can't hear you.
Oh, you can't hear me. Oh, can other people not hear me too? Raise your hand if
I can hear you just fine. This is Benton.
All right. Well, I'll try to speak a little louder. Can you hear me now, Judy? Oh, she can't hear me. Well, I don't know what to do about that. The rest of you can hear me, though, right? Okay. Spirits that we call in, we call them in, we call the other power in, we give ourselves away to the other power at these sacred mountains, in these sacred power places. But the Zen school, we embrace the other power. But we're also self-power, jiriki. There are parts of our deepest self that we have kind of overlooked and forgotten about that naturally extends itself to support the cries of others. They're in here, and they want to support those cries. And, of course, as the Mahayana movement flourished, in most Mahayana traditions and Tibetan traditions, they began reciting the four vows, the four bodhisattva vows that we do every morning. And they do that worldwide. And we don't do that every morning now anymore. We do that once a week. I don't know. Maybe we do it three times a week. Well, anyway, we do it. We're going to do it at the end, as you know. So vowing to become who we really are. And acting on this interdependence, because really we are beings who hear those cries. who aren't blown away by them and who extend ourselves to them. That's who we really are. We commit ourselves to one or more of these heroic bodhisattva ideals. They're extraordinary, and yet they're ordinary, just like your neighbor, just like Mr. Rogers. Just like Mr. Rogers. No big deal, just ordinary, but extraordinarily ordinary, right? We all have the capacity to embody these bodhisattvas. And of course, the vows seem inconceivable. They seem impossible. Beings are numberless, vowing to freedom, delusions are inexhaustible, vowing to extinguish them, dharma gates are boundless, vowing to enter them, Buddha's way is unsurpassable, vowing to become it. Radical optimism. Not optimism based on the thinking mind, which is always trying to get out of its current situation to be in some later. Radical optimism, right here, the root. So four mythological archetypes I'm going to talk about today, the four that we chant about in our meal chants. And sometime I'll talk about the other six. We visualize them, we call them to mind, and we enact their energy, their great energy. Maitreya, Buddha, future birth. Manjusri Bodhisattva, great wisdom. Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, great compassion. Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, great activity. So Maitreya, Manjusri, Avalokiteshvara, and Samantabhadra. And starting with Maitreya. So I write about these four in my first book, Nothing Holy About It. I'm going to give a few quotes from that book. I say, when Shakyamuni Buddha told Maitreya that he too would become a Buddha someday, Maitreya started envisioning himself as a Buddha, calm, compassionate, and wise. So Maitreya is the icon of hope and our intention to fulfill our aspiration. To in some way, give nurturance to the cries that are inside so many people in the world right now. So many people, including ourselves. So the icon of hope and aspiration, and also what does Maitreya mean? It means loving kindness. Maitri, loving kindness. Metta, loving kindness in Pali, Sanskrit and Pali. So love, loving kindness embodies the unfulfilled aspect of ourselves. We like this bodhisattva who has not become Buddha. We haven't become Buddha either. But through loving kindness practice, we can get a glimmer of the self we want to be and of the world we want. That's Maitreya. Other power in these other countries, these Asian countries, huge rocks in China. I don't know about Japan, but in China, Bhutan, even Tibet, come Maitreya, come in Sanskrit. Visualization practices to join him and manifest him as he sits in the Tushta heaven. That's the other power. Self-power. We generate the metta in here, the loving kindness in here. May I be safe. May I feel protected. May I be loved. May you feel safe. May you feel protected. May you feel loved. Including everyone, all beings. African Americans who have been gunned down, their family members who are grieving, the store looters, the police, the rabbits eating our plants. We have all these rabbits in our yard this year, more ever than in the pandemic, eating all our plants. even the President of the United States. Even the President of the United States. May he be safe. May he feel protected. May he feel loved. If he felt protected and loved, it'd be a whole different deal, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it? So now I'm going to recite a poem by Lew Welch from the 60s. At last, in America, Maitreya, the coming Buddha, will be our leader. And at last, will not be powerful and will not be alone. Take it as a simple prophecy. Look into the cleared eyes of so many thousands, young, and think, maybe that one, that one, that one. Look out. The secret is looking out and never forgetting there are phony ones and lost ones and foolish ones. Know this, Maitreya walks our streets right now. Each one is one. There are many of them. Look out for him, for her, for them, for these will break America as Christ cracked Rome. And just tonight, another one got born. And just tonight, and just now, other ones are getting born. So all of us, as a future Buddha, even though we feel inadequate, we feel frail, we feel confused, Maitreya, Maitreya, right here. And during the last 3 decades, many AIDS hospices have developed in the United States. The first one was the Maitri Hospice in San Francisco, M-A-I-T-R-I, the Loving Kindness Hospice, the Energy of Maitreya, by the Zen teacher Eon Dorsey, the Hartford Zendo. Judy was talking about him the other day. Judy, who we lost, I don't know if she got her back. We just lost her. So now I want to show an image of... Show an image of Maitreya. So I'm going to share the screen. Then I'm going to... this will just take a minute. Excuse me. Well, I think it's supposed to show here. If it doesn't show, I'm just going to have to go on. But let me try one more time. Screen sharing has stopped as the shared window is closed. Okay, share screen. Just one more minute. Just one more minute. So can you still hear me? Can't hear me.
Yep, we can hear you.
Oh, you can hear me, but you can't see that. Can you see this, what I put on the screen?
Just see
you. No, we see your, we still see your picture.
You see me?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you,
what do I do now?
You want to click the share screen button again on the green button. Do you see that?
That's not at the bottom like it's supposed to be. Let's see. Maybe I'll make this smaller. and I'll come back to.
Start by clicking the Zoom window, the one that has all the people on it. Activating that.
Okay, the Zoom window. Yeah, there you are. All right.
And then now that's where the share screen button should be.
All right.
And then it'll give you some choices of which screen to share.
Now
there you go.
Okay. It was a long wait, but you had a chance to just breathe. Just breathe. And there he is. There's my man. There's our man. Maitreya. Maitreya. So Maitreya, in this pose, in many poses, he's rejoicing, he's jubilant, he's playful. And he incarnates as Hote in China and Putai in Japan. Hote, who carries a sack, the Zen master Hoke, who dresses in rags, carries a sack with oranges on its back, gives them to poor people and kids. And then when people who aren't poor comes along, asks them for a penny so it can buy more oranges. Hote, Putai, Maitreya, asked about the fundamental meaning of life, he drops his sack. And then someone asks him, but how do you live the meaning? He picks up his sack and he walks on. George Bernard Shaw, we don't stop playing because we grow old. We grow old because we stop playing. So he inspires us with his playfulness, his joyfulness in the midst of these difficult times, these chaotic times, with his radical optimism. So when I began practice, I somehow conjured up some radical optimism from books I read about this teaching. And I developed an inspiration to practice. I was inspired by the practice, and I turned that into an aspiration. Then once, when my practice was flagging, going down, and I was getting discouraged, and just walking the street during a break in San Francisco in the winter, just right in the middle of the city, and I was down with my head, and I was, I think I'm not even going to go back to this retreat. We're in a session. And I saw this little tiny green sprout popping up out of the cement. Manjushri. Maitreya. And I didn't think Maitreya. I just saw this energy. And I thought, wow, if that little green sprout can do it, I can probably do it too. So I ran back to Zen Center and rejoined the session. That's Maitreya in our hearts. We can do it. We can do it. In Nothing Holy, my book, I quote Sungsan, quote, dreams, delusions, flowers of air, says Sungsan. And then I say, as human beings, that's what we are. We're deluded dreamers. We're flowers of air. But it's wonderful that we're flowers of air. There's an ephemeral quality that allows for transformation. Because we're flowers of air, we can become whatever we want. When we get discouraged or feel despondent, Maitreya reminds us that in spite of, or possibly because of our ephemeral flowers of air nature, we can reignite our dream anytime. Anytime means right now, right in the middle of all this havoc, all this pain, all this chaos. So that's Maitreya. Second bodhisattva I'm going to talk about, I've talked about a lot, Manjushri. Manjushri. So let me scroll down and show you Manjushri. So here's Manjushri. Here he is with his sword in his right hand and his scroll in the left hand, and he's sitting on the lion. There he is, sitting on the lion. So that sitting on the lion, that's his courage, and that's his equanimity, right on the lion. Anybody feel like you're sitting on a lion right now? That's his courage and his equanimity. And he has his sword. He has his sword. Cutting away all these worries, all these concerns, all these old ideas, all these patterns. Swishing away, swish, whoosh, swish, whoosh. Cutting away our thoughts before they have a chance to solidify and freeze in us until the mind stops and opens to what is with deep silence. Swish, whoosh, swish, whoosh, swish, whoosh. And in his left hand, he carries what? A scroll. It's the Prajnaparamita Sutras. It's the sutras that help us do that, because they take away everything, all the thoughts we depend on, so we can rest on something deeper and more all-encompassing than our thoughts. And you see, he's youthful. He's young. He's got the lightness of beginner's mind. He's got the lightness of that bumper sticker. Don't believe what you think. That lightness. Don't believe what you think. Manjushri, also the bodhisattva of language, including poetry. He overcomes the language which separates the subject and the verb and the object. We are imprisoned by these dichotomies. Subject, Tim, talks to Benton. Benton listens to Tim. We get imprisoned by these as if they're real. He overcomes that separation by helping us pause so we can leap beyond the subject-object split. So last time I talked about an Allen Ginsberg poem, under the burden of solitude, under the burden of dissatisfaction, the weight we carry. Depressed in these times, anxious in these times. What's going to happen next? Who's going to get killed next? What can we do about it? What can we really do about it? It happens over and over again. The pandemic, all those grieving families of African Americans were caught, were stuck, but we leap. Manjushri helps us leap under the burden of solitude, under the burden of dissatisfaction. The weight we carry is love. Maitreya, Manjushri, is love. Manjushri helps us make that leap. The second leap that I talked about last time, from Garcia Lorca, to take the wrong road. Oh, it seems like we're on the wrong road, doesn't it? It seems like our country, our community, our way of life, it's on the wrong road that we've been treating people of darker skin in this horrendous way for all this time. We're on the wrong road. We're lost. Why will we ever get home? We're lost. Manjushri just helps us stay with that, let go of those ideas, and leap. To take the wrong road is to come to the snow which covers everything, the snow which sparkles in its iridescence. Doesn't leave anything out. Fresh snow, iridescently covering everything. Manjushri, in the Prajnaparamita Sutras, he says, if a person, when cultivating the paramita of wisdom, does not see any paramita of wisdom and finds neither any dharma to grasp or to reject, he or she is really cultivating the paramita of wisdom. So any idea of wisdom, cut it away. Just be here. Just be here. So we can live out Manjushri's promise. Now, excuse me, that's Maitreya's promise. Living out Maitreya's promise, but also Manjushri's. seeing through and being free from all this junk that we carry. And of course, sometimes these bodhisattvas show off a little bit. Just like Dharma teachers sometimes can show off a little bit. I won't mention any in particular. Certainly not moi. They show off a little bit. And his verbal skills are so good that he's supposed to have had to be called for showing off sometimes. One Katagiri Roshi was talking about him, and he said, "Oh, I saw the flower in the backyard, and I had Manjushri statue with me. I was bringing it in, and Manjushri said, 'Wow.' But I realized saying 'Wow' is already too much. Let the flower speak for itself. The flower speaks for itself. Everybody speaks for themselves if we let them. If we allow them, if we go into this depth, we hear them speaking, we allow them to speak, and we find our own voice there too." So that's Manjushri, the third bodhisattva, Avalokiteshvara. Kwannon in China, or Kannon, Kanzeon in Japan. So let me pull her down. Avalokiteshvara has different genders. There's Avalokiteshvara. There's a small Avalokiteshvara. There's a big one. There's a big Avalokiteshvara. Look at all the eyes, witnessing the suffering all around us. The eyes to witness the suffering, because she's the bodhisattva of compassion. Many arms to help people in many different ways. In this one, it looks like she has innumerable arms. Maybe 1,000 arms, someone has suggested, but I wouldn't want to try to count them. To help people. People need help in many different ways. We don't have to be attached to our way of helping. If we go into Manjushri's stillness, we know how to help them because they show us how to help them. They show us how to help them. So in Nothing Holy About It, I say, Avalokiteshvara sits on the lotus that grows in muddy water with roots deep in the mud. The beauty of the lotus depends on the quality of the mud. Is the mud well composted? Does it really include all beings? This is important. Is it well composted? Does it really include all beings? If so, it will be a beautiful lotus, and Avalokiteshvara will do wonderful things. He is continually changing forms and gender. 2 arms, 4 arms, 1,000 arms, is 1 hand, 5 heads, 10 hands, as many as needed. Embodying the stillness of a Manjushri. If we haven't returned to the stillness of beginner's mind, it's hard to give ourselves freely. Ego needs get in the way. Tim gets in the way. But after we've embodied the spaciousness of a Manjushri, Avalokiteshvara comes out. Manjushri helps us deconstruct our thoughts about compassion so we can manifest true compassion. Ideas about who we think we should be or about being a good person, just drop away. Just drop away so that we can be wholeheartedly present wherever there is suffering, responding to the cries of the world, responding to the cries of the community. Manjushri generally stands on one side of Buddha in Zen centers, and Avalokiteshvara on the other. Compassion without Manjushri tends to be a little bit shaky. Maybe it's codependence. Our own needs are feeding our desires to help others. Or maybe it's mixed with anxiety and worry. We start off being just open, and we start to worry. Is she okay? Did I show my compassion the right way? Maybe I did it wrong. Maybe I have to do it differently. How should I do it? Maybe we stay all night awake, worried. And then we need to come back to Manjushri, back to our cushion, back to our breathing, so that we can manifest Avalokiteshvara's compassion. So in my book, I talk about my friends, Jim and Sharon. I'm going to quote from my Nothing Holy About It again. Sharon is quite needy, and Jim constantly indulges and excuses her behavior. I came to realize that Jim's codependence was getting under my skin. I found myself thinking, well, this is curious. What's going on here? Recognizing my own reactivity, that's Manjushri's wisdom. That's all we need to do is recognize it, open up to it, acknowledge it, and it begins to drop away. Then I needed to evoke his energy to turn my eyes toward and look deeply at my own negative reactions. There they are. Yeah, there are my own negative reactions at my own shadow that I'm still carrying around after all these years of sasana. There it is, my shadow. How deeply I saw I was caught by Jim's situation. If we focus our kind attention on our shadow, there's a possibility of becoming enriched by it, composted by it. So we can produce a wonderful plant. When I saw my negative reactivity clearly, it dissolved. My heart opened completely to both Jim and Sharon, and I felt deeply connected. So with Manjushri's courage, we can draw negativity toward us with an invitation. We can charm our shadow into a relationship. It's just pent-up energy. That's all it is. Once it's free to flow out into the world, we're released. The shadow is no longer a shadow. We return to our original nature, still and loving and compassionate. Avalokiteshvara's energy allowed me to be completely available to my two friends, Jim and Sharon. At least for a while, before my shadow got in the way again, and I had to do the practice again, on and on forever. In the Lotus Sutra, Avalokiteshvara is emphasized, and Buddha says, if a living being needs to be saved, Avalokiteshvara will appear in the body of a Buddha. And then the sutra lists more than 30 different bodily manifestations according to what is needed. Male, female, young, old, varied by class, station, occupation, divine, human, non-human, whoever is crying out. She comes. Many examples of this. I used to talk about my friend Patrick Wood, who began reaching out to homeless people before people knew that there were so many people living in camps. And he would go, he would dress down. He had depression, so he couldn't sleep well. And they came into his drop-in center in North Minneapolis, and he reached out to them. And because of that, there was a whole movement in Minneapolis that went on for a long time to try to end homelessness, even bringing homeless people to the legislature. And that did well for a while, and then it seemed to sort of vanish. And now here we are, we're more homeless people than ever, in the middle of a pandemic, in the middle of this series of shootings and of innocent black men, which has actually been going on since slaves were first brought to this country, but finally now it's coming to people's attention. So now the final bodhisattva, Samantabhadra, great activity that is based on our interconnectedness. So Patrick Wood is also a bodhisattva of great activity. It says in the Flower Garland Sutra, Samantabhadra says in the Flower Garden Sutra, if the mind makes no discrimination, the 10,000 things are as they are of a single essence. Manifests in everything that exists, even a blade of grass, that is Samantabhadra. Dignity, vibrancy, light emanating through every pore. Everything in the universe is present in every cell and every being. Let me bring up Samantabhadra. Our Samantabhadra. Every pore. Every pore. Samantabhadra goes into ocean mirror samadhi. When the ocean is still, it mirrors everything. The sky, the clouds, the birds. Each thing is completely itself, and also the whole ocean. Individual and undivided. Samantabhadra manifests ocean seal samadhi. Even the bunny that's eating all our flowers in the backyard is there. Samantabhadra reflecting the bunny seals the bunny's existence just as it is. The ocean of Samantabhadra seals its identity, its authenticity, ocean seal samadhi. So it doesn't need to be anyone other than just who it is, a hungry bunny. When our mind is still, we don't need to look anywhere else for validation because we experience Samantabhadra's ocean seal. And of course, you see, he's riding on his elephant. That's what he does. He always rides on his elephants. Calmness, deliberateness, unyielding action of his elephant. My friend Terry, who's a pulmonologist, during the pandemic, he has just been, I would say, working, I don't know. Well, he used to work 60 or 70 hours. But he's working all the time because of the pulmonologists or what's needed. This is about the lungs. So he's just working. And I he used to live next door, but he's moved now. But I can just imagine him going on every morning, coming back late at night, always calm, always peaceful, and yet, in a way, worn out, but deliberate, because he's got that elephant stick-to-itiveness, and he really wants to help. He really wants, he knows that he's doing what he most deeply wants to do in this world. To find what we most deeply want to do, even a little bit, is wonderful because life is short. And Samantabhadra supposedly is hard to see because when we're wholeheartedly engaged in something, we disappear. And since every pore in his body is the entire universe, by helping one person, we help everyone. And that way we transform the world. He's also, Samantabhadra, the bodhisattva of environmentalism. Each bird, each rock, each tree is precious and brilliant. Each bunny rabbit eating our hostas that Linda has spent so much time cultivating. We had the most beautiful hostas in the neighborhood. And now, gate. But the roots are still there. They'll come up again. Bodhisattvas remind us that our roots are still here. It'll come up again. Social justice, Samantabhadra, social justice. In the 60s, when I was an activist, it was Martin Luther King. He was our leader, indomitable spirit. He was threatened, he was arrested, and then ultimately assassinated. But his spirit, his bodhisattva spirit is still with us. And now we don't seem to have an MLK figure leading us. Instead, we have a whole hundreds and thousands of people all around the world peacefully protesting, volunteering to help each other. Radical optimism. The bodhisattva energy is always waiting for us to call on it. So I'm going to close by another quote from Nothing Holy About It, in which I say that one bodhisattva opens up into the next. We start with Maitreya, who helps us develop inspiration. And out of that, we tap into a deep aspiration. Let me see. Let me pull my tray up again for you. Now, this is my Maitreya. There are much more somber Maitreyas. This Maitreya I chose because of the playfulness. We have to do some play sometimes. We don't have to. It's just good for our non-souls to do that. So Maitreya, and then Manjushri keeps us steady, cutting away our expectations, our desires, our worries, our anxieties, just cutting them away. And then Avalokiteshvara, Kwannon, Kanzion, opening our hearts so we can radiate real compassion that comes from our roots, the rootedness in no thingness, the rootedness in the life force. Finally, Samantabhadra, inhabiting every pore of our body with vibrancy and light, so we can manifest her great activity, his great activity, grounded in the deep quietness and spaciousness of Manjushri. These bodhisattvas help us bring alive our dreams, our flowers of error, grounded in the groundlessness of the universe. What I want to say today, luckily I was able, with the help of one of my friends, well, it was Benton. Was it Benton who helped me? Whoever it was, somebody helped me. I was able to call them up. But they're here anyway, if we can't call them up visually. They're here. But visually helps.